Thank you, Evelyn. Father's Day was just a couple of weeks ago, and it may have been a bittersweet occasion for those of us who have already lost our dads or who have elderly fathers in frail health. Father's Day reminds us that love is to be felt and shared now, rather than in some uncertain future. And I remember back in 1993 when my dad called me on the phone and told me he had lung cancer. That Thanksgiving, I went to see him in Houston, and I visited him every couple of months for the next year. Dale Dudley Schreiner died September 12th, 1994, and I got back on a plane to Houston one last time. While I stayed at his house the next week, neighbors came to the door. "You must be his son. I want to offer my condolences." And then their voices would break, and I knew that my loss was also their loss. I wondered if my father had known how much they cared. So much of the love and appreciation we have for friends and acquaintances, neighbors, is barely visible. Love for these individuals may tend to whisper instead of shout, and so we can greatly underestimate the warm feelings that other people have for us. This morning I'm going to tell you some things about my relationship with my dad, which was extremely unusual. Didn't know my father when I was growing up. My parents were divorced when I was three, and my mom moved from Illinois to California. Mom was a wonderful person. However, the divorce brought out a kind of an anxious and fearful side in her. And so she didn't want me to have any contact with Dale. And as a result, I feared my father without having any idea why I should be afraid of him. When I was eight, I was filling out a form at school that asked for the name of one of my father's friends. Told my teacher I didn't know any of his friends. "Well, just make up a name." You know what I wrote? "Mr. Danger." Well, then when I was nine, Mom explained to me why she and her father had split up. Dad was gay. Later, Dale told me that he had known he was gay as a teenager, but he never discussed his sexual orientation with his family. He didn't hide it either, and he even did a little gender bending. When he was in high school, his stepmother sat down with him one day and said, "Dale, I don't care who you associate with or what you do with them, but that coral nail polish has got to go." This is in rural Illinois in the 1930s. When Dale went to college, he became romantically involved with his male voice teacher, who was just a few years older. Also started hanging around with a classmate named Margaret Baker. Later, Dad told me that he had been attracted to her, so I guess he was a little bit bisexual. They naively believed that marriage would change him, and after they were wed, Dad went off to World War II. I was the tangible result of that marriage. Dale was a pilot who flew 67 combat missions from India into China over the hump, meaning over the Himalayas. It was a perilous assignment, and many pilots didn't make it home. After the war, he was a proud member of the Hump Pilots Association. My dad was a true patriot, and he deserved the full acceptance of the nation that he loved. I'm proud of his military service, and I'm proud of the many other GLBTQ soldiers who have fought and died in the armed forces. Today, I'm wearing one of Dad's ties that celebrates his love of flying. After returning from the war, Dale filed for divorce and began living with his former voice teacher, Don Johnson, and they moved to Houston. So I grew up with negative feelings about homosexuality, you can imagine. But in college, I learned there's no evidence that gay people are mentally ill or morally inferior. And in psychotherapy, I worked through a lot of feelings about gay people in general and my father in particular. I also was interested in probing into what the Bible says about this issue when I was in theological school. Someone who thinks every verse of the Bible is the clear and literal word of God might have trouble accepting homosexuality. But the key anti-gay verses, which are very few, such as Leviticus 20:13, are located in parts of the Bible that contain many supposedly divine commandments that are highly questionable, sometimes shockingly immoral, and sometimes just plain peculiar. For example, Leviticus 19:19 forbids sowing a field with two kinds of seed. Nor shall there come upon you a garment made of two kinds of stuff. Do you remember Dacron polyester leisure suits? Evidently, they really were an abomination. So I was changing. And Dale was changing too. While he and Mom were married, he was capable of insensitivity and even cruelty, as he openly admitted later. He drank to excess, caroused till all hours, and spent too much money. How many of you have seen Rocket Man, The Life of Elton John? Some of you have. Well, Dale and Elton would have had a hell of a good time and might even have survived the experience. But in another similarity to Elton, when Dad was around 50, he and Don both started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. He also quit smoking. And Dad was very deeply religious. He and Don attended a big Methodist church in Houston for many years, Dale singing in the choir. And he began corresponding with me and my mother. In 1981, Mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Dale asked our permission to visit, and I was moved to see how kind and patient he was in helping her deal with this cruel illness. It was amazing to see the two of them almost picking up where they left off, except with a mature sense of mutual acceptance, healing, and forgiveness. I even got to hear them call each other by their old pet names. She was Bobby, and he was Bunny. A few months after Mother died, Dad invited me to visit him in Texas. Still remember looking out the window on that plane trip, wondering, what is this going to be like? For one thing, I would be meeting his partner, Don, the man for whom he had left my mother. Both of them taught piano, and when I walked into the living room, I saw two grand pianos nested together like a giant yang and yin symbol. Dale and Don made me feel very much at home, and for nearly 15 years, I visited them annually. It was quite educational to observe my reactions to them and let go of old prejudices. Often I would catch myself being surprised at how typical they were, as if I expected them to be like, you know, men from Mars. So much of prejudice is the false belief that one difference implies a whole lot of other differences. Sure, it makes a difference to be gay, but mostly, people who love each other are just people who love each other. At that time, I was a family therapist, so I was familiar with the way spouses communicate. Dale and Don were like most any old married couple, except that they didn't have typical female-male gender issues. If you had simply read a printout of what they were saying to each other, 99% of the time, there would have been no clue that these were two gay guys. Like long-term straight couples, there was the same ability to almost read each other's minds, the same long-standing petty irritations, the same daily routines and seasonal rituals, the jokes that only they fully understood, the deep mutual dependency, the comfort in each other's silent presence, the same loyalty and abiding love. When I met Dad, he was 65, easygoing, slender, medium height, with horn-rimmed glasses and a brown toupee. I brought a few photos that you can see at the book table afterward. He was a friendly fellow who effortlessly initiated conversations with total strangers of all ethnic backgrounds. He also had a zany sense of humor, an ability to be childlike even though he had outgrown being childish. For instance, instead of saying, "Well, whatever turns you on," Dad would say, "Well, whatever makes your socks go up and down." Dad was a fiscal conservative and a Republican, but because of that party's opposition to gay rights, he eventually switched to the Democrats. He had the greenest green thumb in the world, and during each visit, we would tour the backyard, which you see there, and he'd tell me how every single plant was doing. One day in 1993, Dale found Don dead from heart failure. A few months later, Dale was diagnosed with lung cancer. Dad and I were talking about death one afternoon, and he said, "I don't think I'm afraid of dying. In fact, I don't think I've been afraid of anything or anyone my entire life. Sometimes I think it's just arrogance." Dale never showed us a domineering or hostile arrogance, but there was a subtle swagger about him, an unflappable self-confidence, which no doubt made him a better pilot under fire during the war. I'm sure that this soft-spoken and somewhat effeminate man had more physical courage than a lot of guys with steely eyes and gravelly voices. Once, when Dad had just a few weeks to live, he told me about a dream. In the Methodist church choir, Dale would sometimes make little side comments to amuse people during rehearsal. And in his dream, the choir was rehearsing, and suddenly he was overwhelmed with the beauty of the music. He whispered to someone about it, and the choir director, Dr. Ware, said, "Dale, what are you saying now?" And Dale replied, "Oh, I was just thinking that we should just stop and appreciate this magnificent music." And the choir master replied, "You know, Dale, you're absolutely right. Dale, we're so glad you're one of us. We're so glad you're here with us. You're one of a kind." And when Dad said, "You're one of a kind," I heard so much feeling in his voice. Dale Dudley Schreiner was one of a kind. And every person is one of a kind. This is not just Dad's dream. This is you. This is me. We are all ordinary, and we are all extraordinary. And then Dale's physical being came to an end. At his memorial service, the Methodist minister mentioned Don as his lifelong companion. Most people knew what that meant. Remarkably, my Aunt Nellie put this picture of both Dale and Don by the guest book, where people would come in and sign, instead of just a picture of Dale. But I wish their true marriage of heart and mind could have been openly celebrated. Their relationship lasted over half a century, except for the few years Dale was married. Many of their younger friends looked to them as role models. I spoke earlier of the people who came to offer condolences, and one of them was a young woman about 35. Her daughters had studied piano with Dad, and she was just dissolved in grief. She told me that she had needed someone like a father in her life, and Dale had served as a kindly father figure. So the man who could not be there for his young son was like a father many years later for this young woman. He may have never realized how much he meant to her, but I'm so glad I found out. Eventually, everything was packed, and I was alone, saying goodbye to his empty house and his vivid presence. I decided to also say farewell to his beloved backyard with his dear plants all around the edges and the magnificent tree in the middle, like a tree of life. As I walked toward the gate to the backyard, right in front of the gate, I saw a dazzlingly beautiful little snake, about 2 feet long, rainbow-hued, and just impossibly, ethereally slim. As I approached this tiny serpent, it zipped into a hole by the house with a kind of magical, flowing motion that I had never seen before or since. I don't know if it was a leaping slither or a slithering leap. This startling little encounter had an air of the mythic about it, and so I thought, I will imagine that this magical snake has given me permission to enter the garden. So I opened the gate and walked to the great tree on that sultry Houston afternoon. The only sound was a resonant choir of cicadas. You know what cicadas sound like down south? The air will be silent for a while and then they'll begin, sounding like hundreds of castanets playing at 10,000 RPM. Louder and louder, to a crescendo. Then the sound drops and drops and drops into silence again. I stood there, appreciating that magnificent music through several choruses of cicadas playing castanet crescendos for my father. And then I took my leave. On the plane ride home, I thought about how the good that we do goes on and on. Names are forgotten. Memories fade. But our actions have changed other people, and their actions affect others in turn, like everlasting ripples in a limitless pond. The good that we do cannot be lost. In fact, we could not call it back if we wanted to. It just keeps rippling outward. Rippling outward, and after my father's death, I knew that more deeply. Everything we cherish about people is, in some sense, safe, in some sense, eternal. My father is gone, and yet he is present. As Rick Maston wrote after another man's death, he having been must always be, nothing is lost, nothing is wasted, and may this truly be so.